This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. On a night in 2015, during a big party weekend at Boston University, two students from another school, MIT, entered a BU student dorm. At some point, while they were in the building, one of them went into the room of a female BU student and sexually assaulted her. Now, the dorm has a security desk, it has security guards, and it also has rules. But despite all that, the male MIT student was still able to assault the BU woman. So she sued. Boston University, the victim said, had a responsibility to take measures to protect her from the assault, and it failed. Well, this case and others like it have opened up a new dilemma on campuses all across America. How much responsibility do universities have to protect students from harm? After all, the vast majority of college students are young adults. It also has parents questioning how they can be sure that their children, adults, yes, but still growing up, are in a safe environment when they're at school. Boston University declined to join us for this discussion as this is an ongoing case, but we heard from a lot of you. Here's Katrina in Tennessee.
When I was at MTSU in the late 80s, early 90s, I was flashed and followed by a gentleman while I was running on the campus. And when I called campus police, I was scolded for being at the track by myself. That was my experience with campus security 20, 30 years ago. So I hope it's improved.
Has it improved? We're going to get into that. Joining now from WBUR, which is owned by Boston University, is Boston Globe contributor Nubba Khan. Nubba, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Nubba is currently a student at BU and, by the way, a former intern here at 1A. So it's great to have you, Nubba.
It's great to be here.
Well, tell us about what happened at Boston University that's drawn so much attention to the college's campus security policies. What exactly is this lawsuit all about?
So this lawsuit stems from the assault of a BU student on campus, as you mentioned, in October of 2015. And she lived in Stuvey 2, which is this high-rise apartment-style dormitory here at Boston University. On that night, two men from MIT left their host after being checked into the dorm as guests, officially. And according to court documents, the two of them walked through the residential floors with no cameras, and opened unlocked doors. They entered at least 11 rooms on 7 different floors of the dormitory. And then at around 2:45 a.m., one of those men entered the apartment and then the room of a BU junior and sexually assaulted her. And now that student, Jane Doe, is suing Boston University and saying that they did not keep her safe and that they gave her a false sense of security.
Now, tell me a little bit more about the substance of her complaint. What exactly is she accusing the college of failing to do?
So it is one breach of contract claim and one negligence claim, which essentially means, and then negligence claims against individual administrators. So she's suing the school as a whole and then individual top administrators, basically saying that they gave her a false sense of security and that they didn't enforce security policies that could have kept her safe, such as automatically locking door locks and the guest policy.
And what has Boston University said?
Boston University has been, well, in their motions to dismiss the case as a whole, has basically been saying it is not our responsibility to keep you safe. An exact quote from them is that the university made no definite or certain promise to keep students safe and that Jane Doe was given the tools to ensure her safety and elected not to use them.
Given the tools to assure her safety, what did they mean?
A door lock.
She was in the room. She could have locked the door, but the door was open.
Basically, that is her that is their argument.
Okay, so the door had a lock on it. You chose not to use the lock, therefore don't hold us responsible, even
of
though...
Of her individual bedroom, yeah.
Of her even though this guy shouldn't have been in the building in the first place.
And ultimately, it was her roommate who left the suite door unlocked. She shared, like, an apartment-style suite. But they're still saying you should have locked your bedroom door.
So sexual assault on college campuses is, unfortunately... very common. So why is this case different? Why has it opened up this larger national conversation about campus security?
Well, there have been a lot of cases recently in Massachusetts about universities and what they're held responsible for. A lot of those have been related to suicide. But on college campuses, you see a lot of sexual assaults. You see a lot of alcohol-related incidences. So the argument really in this case is, could it have been the school's responsibility to ensure her safety here? And because she was assaulted on campus in a dorm by a third party, it opens it up to this legal discussion.
Now, what's the reaction been like on campus and the campus culture? Let's start with students. Everybody's heard about this story, I'm sure. What's the debate like among the undergrads?
I mean, there have been some Reddit posts, some Facebook discussions. You've got Twitter. I think people are very interested in how this turns out and how the balance of responsibility kind of falls. We get messages, of course, from schools in general, just as college students, saying that they care about us. And so people are interested to see what that means in reality and what it means legally.
Is there a campus-wide debate about responsibility when it comes to, look, the university's responsibility to obey its own security rules, not have people wandering the halls when clearly that's not safe, versus the fact that when you're over 18, you're an adult and another person isn't responsible for you. You're responsible for yourself.
Yes. I think some of the confusion there is when you're living in an apartment building, like outside of college, after you're done graduating, sometimes you do have stringent security, right? So the debate is really about, we're choosing to live on this campus. What does that mean?
When you choose to live here.
When you choose to live in a dormitory.
And go to school there. Well, what about the implications nationwide? I mean, we're talking about this case. Now, you mentioned that there are other similar cases, which we're going to talk about, one having to do with a student's suicide and whether the university had any responsibility there. How is the national conversation affecting what's going on there in Boston?
I mean, I think it definitely does have a huge impact. We've seen a trend recently in the past couple of years of a lot of these colleges kind of assuaging that responsibility. And so we're trying to see, is that going to be the new legal standard? NBU and multiple other schools supported MIT in that student suicide case we're talking about. It is a huge, there's a huge swell of support from the colleges themselves nationally about how this is not, they are not parents, and in loco parentis is over.
Sure, they don't want to be the ones held responsible when bad things happen. I guess that's unsurprising, I'll say that.
But when you talk about all of this Title IX regulation that we've been having recently, I mean, it does put it in an interesting light because we are all talking about how this is a huge problem.
No, we certainly are going to talk about that. Look, has campus security on campus at Boston University demonstrably changed? I get the university is in court saying we're not legally responsible, but they might also turn around and say, we better make sure this doesn't happen again.
So when I was reporting on this, the school declined to comment to me as well. Yesterday, I noticed an article had been posted to the school's website from the police department explaining ways to keep safe on campus and emphasizing that you should lock your doors. But as far as I know, there has been no official response, and I haven't seen any significant changes.
Now, we're hearing from lots of listeners already. We're getting a great deal of interest in this story and in other cases like it on campuses across the country. We got this comment from Wes who said, an unescorted guest shouldn't be a thing in a college dormitory. Shame on Boston University. A pretty simple point of view, Nubba, but is it as simple as that to a lot of people?
So the complication with the guest policy is it's actually one of the big arguments that's happening right now in this case. And when it goes to trial, it will be a big point of contention. Is the school's official guest policy is that you do have to be accompanying your guest at all times. But the argument here is obviously in this specific case, these two people were unaccompanied. So at what point is it the school's responsibility to make sure that's being enforced? And Jane Doe is saying that it is absolutely their responsibility to ensure that those rules are followed.
Complicated. I mean, there certainly appears, from my distance, to have been a failure for these two unaccompanied people to be in the dorm late at night, unescorted against policy in the first place. And then the university turns around and says, that notwithstanding, You could have locked your door like any person in any house on any street in America. Your door has a lock. Use it.
Mm-hmm. That is essentially what they are saying.
Yeah, and a complicated debate. We got this from Bridget on Facebook. My son's dorm room locks behind you. You can get out without a key, but you can't get in without a key. Pretty simple fix.
Yeah, so that's the other huge argument that's happening in this case, is the argument over the door locks. So in Stuvey 2, because it's an apartment-style dorm, in a lot of the case depositions, school officials were talking about how it's supposed to be more about choice and adult choices. And so the doors in Stuvey 2 do not automatically lock. And some doors on campus do in some of the larger residences.
I mean, we've mentioned so many listeners have simple fixes, and we keep mentioning them. But wouldn't a school turn around and say, well, fine, the next time we refit this dorm, automatic locks, no more arguments?
Maybe, but the legal arguments there are a little complicated. So if they were to do that, it might change some things legally as well. But that is a huge facet of the case.
All right, sure. We're going to take a break. Where do we see this case going? How long before we get a decision from the courts in some direction on who's responsible?
A trial date is actually being set today. So hopefully we will know soon when that timeline will happen.
So a trial date set today.
To set the trial date.
A few months before the trial starts, and then some answers, at least from the courts in Boston and Massachusetts. Other courts, including the United States Supreme Court, have taken up similar questions to a sexual assault brought against Boston University. It's raised a debate all across America, and many of you are chiming in here on 1A, speaking with Nubba Khan, contributor at the Boston Globe and former intern here at 1A. Nubba, thank you for your reporting. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Thank you for having me.
And we'd love to hear from you as well. So many of you are chiming in already. What do you think should be the responsibility for college campus security? If you're a college student, what's the security situation like at your school? Do you feel safe? Or if you're the parent of a college student, what do you expect from your child's university, your adult child's university, when it comes to campus safety? You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. You can email us 1A@WAMU.org. And as I said, so many of you getting in touch with us, Elise commented on Facebook, from what I remember of my dorm at the University of Florida, you needed a key to get into the building, a different key to get onto your floor from the stairs, and then a key for your room. We rarely locked our room doors because there were already two other locked doors between us and the outside world. And Emily said this on Twitter, I think campus security has come a long way in the last 20 years. When I was at college in the late 90s, there was a walking path on campus that was casually referred to as the rape trail by virtually all the students. It was wooded and poorly lit. And Neil says this, some universities require you to live on campus for a certain duration of time before you can move off campus. So the idea that they're not responsible for at least some part of the security of a student is flat out wrong. Well, John, from the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, what's your perspective on how much responsibility a campus has for an adult student's safety, and even who's to blame when safety's breached?
Again, thank you very much for the question. First off, I'd like to offer condolences to the family and friends of the victim of the sexual assault and to that campus community that was affected. We know these crimes have a chilling effect on the community at large, and my heart goes out to the student identified as Jane Doe. But when we think about the responsibility as a whole, the goal is to ensure that these campus police and public safety agencies that are mostly full-service agencies ensure that they have highly trained personnel in crime prevention, response, investigative strategies, as well as community policing strategies. So the goal is to work with the various members of the campus community in a collaborative way to ensure that safe environment for all.
But at the bottom line, when your officers and the people in your line of work are patrolling and coming up with security policies, I know they want to keep everybody safe. Any decent human would want to do that. But the bottom line, if something goes wrong, it's your responsibility, it's the dean's responsibility, or it's the students'?
Again, when we think about responsibility, one of the things that we don't want to do is blame students for becoming a victim of a crime. Oftentimes, when we think about crimes in general, we like to think about if something happens, how can we as a university or college community work to assess if there are failures in a process, and more importantly, are there things that we can do to improve those processes? Yeah. But again, it's a collaborative approach in terms of working with the public safety department, the dean of students, and any other constituents on campus to assess and or evaluate where those failures occurred, and then more importantly, come up with a strategy to improve upon those failures.
And very important to say, I think you raised an important point. When we talk about who's responsible after an assault in the legal sense, none of this is intended to imply that the victim has any responsibility for the assault. We're talking about whether the university itself can be legally held responsible for the security breach. And I want to make that very, very clear. What about campuses across the country, John? Is there any one standard for campus security, or is it more of a mosaic, a patchwork? Is every school different?
Yes, every school is different. But when we think about IACLEA, our goal is to specialize in advancing and articulating best practices, considering the campus public safety profession as a whole. So when we think about the work that we do, our goal is to sort of advocate what are some of those best practices out there, and then more importantly, whether or not those individual campuses can adopt them to meet the needs of their respective campus or college communities.
Do you find that schools listen when your organization comes with best practices? Because I'm going to guess they're not cheap.
Yes, I believe that overall, most of our, if not all of our campus public safety agencies, they're highly trained, and their number one goal, our number one goal, is to make sure we have a safe environment for outstanding academic learning, overall student safety.
Okay.
So when we think about those recommendations, oftentimes they are adhered to.
Okay, let's talk about the specific case of Boston University. Just we got some of the facts of the case. Two young men got past the security that existed in Stuvey 2, the dorm, through unlocked doors into the dorm, and then ultimately into a suite where the door was unlocked. In terms of your best practices, I'm not asking you to be a judge in the case. Who failed here?
Again, it's really hard for me to second guess based even on the facts that I have in front of me. But one of the things that I do know is when we think about campus public safety in general, it is a shared responsibility, faculty, staff, students, as we work together to ensure that a safe environment for everyone.
Well, Jeffrey Beeler, I'm glad you're here. You were an attorney in a case, Wynn versus MIT in 2018, that raised similar questions about the role of a college in protecting its students. What was Wynn versus MIT all about?
Wynn versus MIT was about the second leading cause of death of college students across the country, student suicide, which takes the lives of between 1,100 and 1,350 students a year. The case was about the responsibility of colleges and universities to prevent student suicides when they have noticed that a student is at risk of self-harm.
And what did the court ultimately decide?
The court ultimately decided, by pivoting from a case that is directly applicable to the BU case that you were just discussing, called Mullins versus Pine Manor, it pivoted from the duty Carrot imposed in those types of cases, which established in Massachusetts that a college and university has a duty of reasonable care to provide proper campus security to protect students from foreseeable criminal attack. It pivoted from recognizing that duty to recognizing a duty of care owed by colleges and universities in Massachusetts when they know that a student is at risk of suicide, And for non-clinicians, what they said was, when a student is known to have previously attempted suicide recently or shortly before matriculation, or is talking about committing suicide and has a plan, that the school then must meet its duty of care. And then it laid out essentially what would be expected in connection with that duty of care. The first thing that the court laid out was, if the school has suicide prevention protocols and policies in place, they must be employed at that point in time. Secondarily, if the school does not have those policies and practices in place, they're expected to put the student in contact with appropriate mental health supports, trained mental health providers, who are really the only people who should be dealing with these types of issues. And one of the biggest fights in connection with preventing student suicide is to get students at risk into treatment with those types of professionals. And lastly, and I would suggest pretty significantly, the court said that if the students are unwilling to comply with those terms, the schools are required to reach out to emergency contacts, which are frequently, of course, the parents. And one of the biggest complaints that I have had in the number of cases I've brought involving student suicides is that the first time the parents became aware that their student was having problems was when they got the phone call to tell them that their student was dead. And what Wen said is that is not going to be acceptable anymore in Massachusetts.
Now, the court laid out a number of requirements that you just listed there, Jeffrey, but the court ultimately said this in its ruling, and please correct me if I'm wrong, universities are not responsible for monitoring and controlling all aspects of their students' lives. And they also said that the days of loco parentis are over. Some people have heard that term. It's getting a little bit old these days, loco parentis. The court says that's over. What does that mean?
Well, the court is right. The days of in loco parentis are over, and they ended back in the 1950s or so. And professors Peter Lake and Robert Bickle have written extensively on this area of the law, and they describe that area when in loco parentis was actually the rule on college campuses, if you will, as the era of insularity. And what that meant was that colleges and universities operated pretty much independent of outside considerations. They were given great leeway in connection with controlling student activities on campus. Think of single-sex housing, no overnight guests, strict control relative to alcohol and drugs to the extent that they could control it, and so on. That all went by the wayside in the 60s, again, according to these professors who've done the research, during the civil rights era in the 60s. Where the schools were no longer viewed as being responsible for the morality of their students, typically thought of as drugs, sex, and alcohol issues on campus. After the 60s, they had what was known as the bystander era of the 70s or 80s. And this is what the colleges and universities, regardless of your type of case, whether it's a criminal attack like the BU case or a student suicide case like some of the cases I've been involved in, sort of focus around, is that the colleges are arguing that the bystander era is what is protecting them now, meaning that they are effectively strangers to the students who attend their schools, just as if you were walking by a piece of land that you didn't own and watching somebody you didn't know drown in a pond that you didn't have anything to do with. You could not be held legally responsible at common law for just walking on your way and allowing that person to drown. The schools have been arguing essentially that that is their relationship to their students, despite the fact that they provide enormous services under the bundle of services that they provide to students. They house them, they feed them, they provide security for them, they educate them, they provide medical care for them, but yet they are still trying to convince the court that a rule of non-liability under the bystander model would be appropriate. And what has happened is they also tout this in loco parentis is dead. You can't make us go back there. And what that is a misapprehension of what common law is attempting to do in these cases.
Okay.
And what the common law is.
Well, let's leave the scholarly legal discussion there, just because I don't want to get too deep into it. Let's get practical, John. Your members patrol these campuses, and they care a lot about security. I don't expect you to argue loco parentis here on the air. But what's the attitude among administrators and security experts who patrol these campuses? Is it that we have, and I know it's collaborative, I know you want to say that, but is it that we have a sort of a responsibility to protect students, or is it the alternate, as Jeffrey describes, that we're bystanders, essentially, and this is a pond that I don't own, and you're 19, and you're an adult, and I'll do my best, but ultimately, your responsibility?
A very good question. The goal, when we talk about, again, the campus public safety, we do everything we can to ensure the safety of all. For example, many of our universities have safety apps, so we do extensive community outreach. We offer a self-defense training and other type of intensive community engagement and or crime prevention training for our students. The fact of the matter is we try to treat them as adults. We try to ensure that they understand what resources they have at their disposal when they come to our campus communities. But our goal when we think about overall safety is to ensure that they have all the resources at their disposal to be able to respond and or address any concerns that may arise. But more importantly, the campus public safety departments are there to help and guide them as well.
Okay. Well, one group that has a huge stake in this conversation, of course, is parents. And we heard from a lot of you. Here's what some of you left in our inbox.
This is Kathleen. I am extremely satisfied with the University of New Haven's direction for safety on campus with our daughter attending there. They orient the parents to all the options that the students have, including an app that allows the police to watch them walk between buildings if it's late at night.
Hi, this is Akua from Herndon, Virginia. I do remember being in high school when Columbine happened, and that was terrifying, but it seemed like a one-off. But now that I'm out of college and I have a family, it directs my choices so much so that we've sent our children to smaller private schools.
My name is Debbie, and I'm calling because when my daughter was a freshman at Drexel University, we were a bit concerned when we got a call that she and some friends had been at an off-campus party that they didn't belong at. We were in touch with the university, and the university could not have been better at talking with us and assuring us about the situation and what was going to be done.
Now, Jeffrey, there was one parent of a Drexel student who, yeah, thought they were a little surprised. The college calling to say your daughter's at an off-campus party, that's a lot of loco parentis. We just have a minute.
The issue about this is reasonable care under the circumstances. That is the standard that these cases are trying to establish for colleges and universities. And it is a flexible standard that, of course, is evaluated given the particular facts. I don't know what particular facts that particular school had that prompted some administrator to make the decision to pick up the phone to call that parent. But I expect that there's more behind the story than just out of the blue there's a call saying your daughter's going to an outside a party, because that type of call, at least in my experience, would be unusual without there being more of a backstory there.
We got this from Michael, who says, when I was in school, I participated in work study that escorted students from building to building after dark. We even had a car taking off-campus students to their homes. This was back in the 90s. And Julian tweeted, some people who are not students but live near campus also feel threatened by the way schools do security. At the University of Chicago, the police force's jurisdiction extends way beyond the boundaries of where students live and study. In the Bronx, Fordham University is a fortress. We're going to talk a lot more about campus security and who's responsible. Speaking with me are John Vinson, president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, and Jeffrey Beeler. He's a lawyer. He was counsel in the case of Wynn versus MIT. And we're hearing from you as well. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. We'll be right back. Well, back now to our conversation on safety on college campuses. What is the responsibility of colleges to keep students safe? The answers are not simple when campus security varies drastically across the country. We heard from a lot of you about your experiences with campus safety.
Hi, my name is Megan. When I went to school in North Carolina, I was in a very physically abusive relationship. There would be nights when I was screaming so loud in my dorm room, screaming for my life, and campus security never came to check on me. One day, I was able to escape from my dorm room, and I ran outside, and I pressed a blue light on campus, and it took campus security 30 minutes to respond to my blue light, and I know that because I watched them respond to the blue light from back inside. Because by the time they got there, it was already too late.
John, Vincent, I'm going to assume that Megan's story is horrific to you, but I know you have best practices, but with the rules different in every state and the rules different at every university, how can parents and students going to a campus have any reassurance that the college takes their security seriously?
Campus public safety, again, we strive on student safety, making that environment safe for all of them to live, work, and study. And one of the ways in which we can continue to ensure that sort of comfort is, again, through the ongoing training that our team members, our public safety officials, gain over the course of their careers, the consistent community outreach engagement programs that we offer, and more importantly, providing ways in which we communicate with the parents. For example, I know many of our institutions have parent orientation, as was mentioned, and members from the public safety or police department get up and talk to the parents about what those services are and how we can work again together to ensure that the students are safe when they're there. But I think it just requires all of us to continue to work not only with our students, but our other campus partners to ensure that they really understand what all of those services are, but more importantly, that the public safety department, police departments, is integrated into the fabric of the college and or university community in a proactive way.
Okay, that's important. Outreach to parents and accessibility for parents and students to be able to talk about security. We got this tweet from Brenda who said, back in the old days when I was at college, my criminology professor told us to be wary of universities that did not do a good job of reporting violent crime. If people aren't aware, they lower their guard. And as a college parent, I noticed that many colleges are not forthcoming. John, is that a concern? I can definitely see a motivation of a college campus, if there's a crime problem on campus, to not necessarily advertise it to parents and students because it doesn't look good.
Well, I think our goal is to increase awareness. So again, I'm not sure there's any desire to keep crimes quiet or not report. Our goal is to make sure our students, faculty and staff, and parents are aware of what's happening so that they can exercise extra due care and caution when they are out and about on campus. So that's one of the things that we try to do, is make sure that our community member knows what's happening on and around the campus from a crime standpoint, so that they can be more prepared, and our crime prevention tips help them sort of respond to possible crimes if they're faced with them.
Jeffrey, what has been your experience? I know you take cases like this to court, but you've dealt with a lot of different universities. Before crime happens, or before a student is assaulted or a tragic suicide takes place, what's the variation you've seen in universities' openness to be open and clear about crime and about security on their campuses?
Well, starting off with the student suicide issue, they're not required to report how many suicides they've had within any given amount of time. And they are quite opaque in connection with that information. In order to get it, oftentimes you need to file a suit and go through subpoenas and do some digging at various public record holders and try to piece the story together yourself, which is problematic because at least as it relates to that concern about students, if the institution itself is not keeping track of those numbers, they have no way of benchmarking themselves against what should be the statistical norms to figure out whether they're doing a good or bad job at addressing those mental health risks that their students are facing at ever-increasing numbers. The Clery Act, I think, is the name of the act that was passed that requires schools to disclose on an annual basis certain scheduled crimes that occur on their campus, and they run from the relatively minor up through sexual assault, and I'm sure homicide is on there as well. But that's a report they make to the federal government, and it is not something that usually accompanies the application packages or the solicitations that are sent out by the colleges and universities when they're advertising their services to incoming classes, nor do I think it's something that they feature prominently in any of their standard issue, here's information about your school. They're there, but you need to dig for them.
And Jeffrey, let's get back to the issue of sexual assault, because it's a huge issue on campuses across the country. How effective, maybe there's no one answer for this, because we've already established that every college is different, and maybe that's part of the problem, but how effective are universities at communicating to women that they take their security seriously and being clear to women about what they can do to help protect themselves and help protect their community?
I think that women on college campuses get many mixed signals from their colleges and universities, and I don't think you need to go any further than the record in the BU case to establish that fact. Like most colleges, what happens within university housing is that efforts are made to create a community feel. They want people to be friendly. They want people to be safe. They want to have this feeling that they belong. They encourage open doors, putting their names on doors, so it became easy in that case for the two assailants to target, as I understand it, 11 doors which housed females before they finally found a victim in the Jane Doe case. All of that is designed by the institutions in order to have this internal healthy community, which is great, wonderful goal. But if you're going to have that and encourage people to leave doors unlocked, encourage people to, you know, be friendly with their neighbors and so on, you need to make sure that your perimeter security works, which means if you have some sort of guest policy like they had in that case, it needs to be enforced so that those two fellows wouldn't have been signed in by people they didn't really know, set loose for more than an hour and a half, so they could enter ultimately the exterior door of this suite of essentially 3 to 4 bedrooms where the students actually lived and assault this young woman when it was her roommate who apparently left the suite door unlocked when she left because of the type of lock they had.
All right, let's make sure that we hear from the people with the most at stake in this entire debate, the students themselves.
I'm Noah, and I'm from Michigan, but I go to college at Columbia College, and it's generally pretty safe there. We actually get emails, like, every night about people who are, like, shot somewhere or robbed.
This is Rachel. I'm currently going to MTech in Spanish Fork in their cosmetology department, and we don't have any security on campus. I would have loved to have some security on campus because recently there was a situation with a student where she was threatening and yelling at other students and instructors.
Hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm in Salem, Oregon. To be honest, as a person of color and a woman of color, no, I don't feel safe on campus. Campus safety actually allows the state police to do drills on campus, and as a person of color, the police in general haven't always been kind to us.
Hi, my name is Shannon. I'm a student at the University of Denver. On campus, a lot of survivors of gender violence have felt blamed by campus safety. I think that this is a really important conversation to be had, especially because campus safety isn't representative of the campuses they serve. They have very few female officers and very few officers of color.
Now, John, what's your response to Vanessa and Shannon? Vanessa makes it very clear that as a woman of color on her campus, relations have been poor. She does not feel protected or safe among the police that are tasked to protect her. And Shannon makes it clear that when it comes to sexual assault, there's a history on her campus of not being taken seriously.
Again, Ayaklea, we prioritize effective approaches to sexual assault investigations through various training programs, and we try to focus on trauma-informed sexual assault investigative strategies, which sort of allows us to sort of really address some of those concerns that were expressed. So our goal is to really ensure there's a victim-centered approach, and we take all of these sexual assault complaints very seriously and investigate them very thoroughly through our highly trained team members at our respective departments.
Tell me what that means, trauma-centered response that you mentioned. What does that mean to the student?
It really means that we listen to their complaints. We don't question whether or not they're if there's any concerns with their complaints, we want to make sure that we rely on them to help us decide how we proceed. So we want to make sure that when they are suffering from some type of allegation or complaint, they come to us and we listen to them and we're responding to them in a victim-centered way, not in an accusatory way.
All right. Well, students are not the only ones worried about campus safety. They're at the center of this conversation, but they're also faculty and staff on college campuses. And we heard from a lot of you as well.
My name is Anne. I am actually a faculty member. I feel safe on my campus with one exception. And that exception is that when I am teaching in a classroom, pretty much anybody can enter the room. I don't really have much recourse sometimes when a student makes me feel uncomfortable or possibly threatened. I can report it, but in the two times I've done so, I really had no recourse and the student had the right to stay in my class.
This is Jennifer. I work at the University of Hartford. We had an incident where someone unfortunately was stabbed on campus. And my only issue with how security handled it was they sent out a text saying that there was an emergency on campus, but didn't specify if it was a gun or if it was a knife. It was scary, but plenty of security and police presence were there.
My name is Professor Michael Jerryson. I have to say that I do not feel safe on my campus. I have ALS, and I cannot use my right hand very well, and I'm disabled. All they've done is lock our doors, so we're trapped in the classrooms at times, and that's about it.
Jeffrey, that last professor seems to imply that security is very crude on his campus. But what about the first person who said that unruly students, she felt threatened in class and she effectively had no recourse and the student remained in class? Is that common?
I don't know how common that is. I think it's going to differ by institution, and it's going to differ based on the facts that they're facing as well as their own internal policies. So I'm not perhaps the best person to address that question.
There's another issue that I want to make sure we get to before we go, and it's guns on campus. John, there are campuses across the country, states that are moving to make it easier to carry on campus. Desmond tweeted, "You are responsible for your own safety, but the gun-free zone campus makes the university 100% responsible because you now cannot defend yourself." I guess in Desmond's case, he can't carry on campus. What's the impact on how your people do their jobs?
Again, every state is different, so that we have to be sort of responsive to what the law requires. If a particular state allows for guns to be carried on campus, then the public safety department would train accordingly and ensure that the campus community understand what those parameters are around carrying concealed weapons on or around the campuses. So again, each state and our campus community is on a case-by-case basis.
Jeffrey, Christina tweeted this. To what extent is the student host who signed in the MIT student as a guest responsible for his or her guest actions?
I think they could have potential responsibility, but the lawyers who brought that particular case chose not to pursue that particular theory against that defendant. But so, it is something that could potentially be pursued based on the fact that that student presumably had agreed by virtue of their attendance at the school to comply with the practices, policies,
so
and procedures,
Jeffrey,
of the school.
Take just 30 seconds. We got to go, but tell me where you think this area of law is headed.
I believe that it is headed to a place where colleges and universities across the country are going to owe the same duty of reasonable care under the circumstances that virtually every other corporation and every other person owes in connection with their daily activities or their operations. To the extent they have historically had types of immunity from being as responsible as the rest of us, I think the time is now for that to end, and that is the focus of many of these cases.
That is Jeffrey Beeler, partner at the Massachusetts law firm of Heinlein, Beeler, Mingase, and Heinemann, and was counsel in the case of Wynn versus MIT. Jeffrey, thank you for making time. Thanks for your expertise.
Thank you for having me.
And John Vinson, thanks to you, president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me as well.
Last word here goes to Steve, who said most colleges require the students to live on campus. Therefore, the college is responsible for safety. That's what Steve has to say. Remember, you can follow all the behind-the-scenes photos of how we make this show on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Thank you so much for being with us this hour. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A.